And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
This is the Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
On to the division round we go. Hey, everyone. Thanks for checking out the Athletic Baseball Show. This is the Monday Mailbag. I'm Tim McMaster, along with Ken Rosenthal. Only one of the four wildcard series goes three games. That's the Mets and the Padres. We're actually recording before that game three. We're recording on Sunday afternoon. But, Ken, despite three sweeps, we had some amazing baseball over the weekend. The Guardians win 1-0 in 15 innings. The Mariners erase a 7-run deficit. They win, they go on to advance. And how about saying goodbye to a couple all-time greats in Albert Pujols and Yadier Molina? It was a full weekend of great baseball. I was in favor of the three-game series over the one-and-done format going into this, and I will say nothing has happened to change my mind.
Tim, I am totally with you on that. And certainly this weekend alone has given Jason Stark much material as he writes his weird and wild columns daily. I don't know if he's going to continue that this offseason. We might lose Jason if he has to do that all offseason. But
I actually, I texted him yesterday because on the Tuesday episode of this podcast, we do Strange But True. And in the 14th inning of the 1-0 game, I texted him, I guess I know what Strange But True is coming from. And he laughed.
Well, actually, it got stranger and truer as the day went on.
Exactly.
So the bottom line is, Tim, that it has been fascinating to watch these series unfold, but one thing keeps coming back to me as I think about all that's going on, and it's the difficulty of one of these clubs in the wildcard round, even the ones that swept, of winning four rounds to win the World Series. To me, and we're going to see this play out, I believe, the advantage that the four teams with the byes have is immense. And it's going to be particularly immense, I would imagine. I don't know this, but I would imagine for the Dodgers. Because while the Mets and Padres have yet to play their game three yet, it stands to reason that they're going to go all out, all hands on deck, as the phrase in October goes. And by the time they get to LA on Tuesday, and remember, they played a night game Sunday night, it's going to be a little bit on fumes, I would think, at least for game one. So that, to me, is the element here that we don't know yet. Playoff baseball is the best. We've seen that. We've seen it time and time again, and it's the best even in one-game knockouts, but this format is fair. It gives teams a little bit more of a chance to breathe. It can be really quick still. It was really quick for the Cardinals. It was really quick for the Blue Jays, and it was really quick for the Rays, but they had a fairer shot than they would have had in the past in the one-game format. Now, a couple of quick thoughts on the teams that were eliminated first. Let's start with Tampa Bay. They are an amazing organization, and it bears repeating. They've made the playoffs 8 of the last 15 years, 4 straight years, including this one, as Mark Topkin of the St. Petersburg Times points out, and they're going to be back. Their farm system remains strong. Tyler Glasnow is under contract through 2024. He looked great in Game 2. So they have not chosen the course that other teams have, certain other teams, and chose to rebuild. They kind of retool constantly, and they keep it going, and it's a great credit to them. Now, they couldn't hit in this series. That was plainly clear. Actually, they couldn't hit all season. Averaged 4.11 runs per game. That was more than a run fewer per game than last season. Largest decline in the game, 21st in the league overall. They need to get some offense. Speaking of no offense, how about the St. Louis Cardinals? One of the better teams we saw all season long, completely stifled by a team that has never been really known for its pitching and defense, at least not this season, certainly not its defense, but Zach Wheeler and Aaron Nola pitched lights out. The bullpen was really good as well. And the Cardinals are now 1-9 in the last 10 playoff games. 1-9. Starting with the 2019 National League Championship Series that lost to the Nationals. And the common denominator is that they haven't scored. One reason for that is it's really difficult to score in the postseason because you're facing the best pitching. But that stat from Derek Gould of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch jumped out at me. Cardinals had only one extra base hit in this series. Paul Goldschmidt, perhaps the front runner for MVP, just faded in September. Arenado wasn't as good as he could be. None of them were. But credit to the Phillies for doing an amazing job. And the Cardinals, like the Rays, are well situated for the future because their team has a good number of its top players under control. Obviously, Molina and Pujols are gone, but also a terrific farm system. Which brings us to the Blue Jays, the team that perhaps suffered the most crushing of all the defeats. This game was absolutely astonishing, and it's worth going over one more time. And I apologize to Blue Jays fans who are listening. But after the Blue Jays led 8-1 going into the sixth inning, their win probability was 99%. When they led 9-5 after seven innings, their win probability was 98%. Now, these probabilities are based on reality. They're based on things that have happened in the past. You play these simulations a zillion times, and this is what you get. The beauty of the game, as Jason constantly reminds us, is things don't always proceed as expected. Now, what's amazing to me, still thinking about this, the blooper that fell for a three-run double off Jordan Romano, that ball gets caught. It's 9-6 going into the ninth with Romano on the mound. And yet it didn't get caught. The game was tied. And of course, we all know what happened after that. So just a really tough loss for the Blue Jays. I do expect they'll keep John Schneider as their manager. Maybe they'll ask a few more questions now internally. Hey, should we maybe look somewhere else? But he did a terrific job in place of Charlie Montoyo. They, too, are another team with most of their roster intact going forward. They're going to be good. Maybe they need to learn how to win games like this. I guess you could say that. And one thing I'll say also about the second guessing of Schneider for not pulling George Springer for defense. I looked this up today. He did that only twice in September. Took him out of center field in the late innings for defense only twice. So it's not like he was going away from what they usually do. That's how they play. So those are the teams that got beat, and really good teams, all of them. Now for the teams that advanced. And of course, we're just talking about three of them with the game between the Mets and Padres taking place after we taped. Let's start with the Guardians. What an amazing effort all season long from the youngest team in baseball, one of the lowest payroll teams in baseball, and a team that has excelled in recent years in pitching development. And we see the results, the fruits of their labor. We saw it in this series. And what really sets up nicely for them, and I remember talking with Zach Meisel of The Athletic before the series began about this, had this gone three, they would have had to have pitched Cal Quantrill in Game 3 and Savali, if they advanced, in the series opener in New York. There's a significant drop-off from Quantrill to Savali, so the idea now of having Quantrill in Game 1 against the Yankees, Bieber in Game 2, Tristan McKenzie in Game 3, then Quantrill again in Game 4, and they'll have to figure it out if there's a Game 5, they're set up much better than they would have been had they not swept. So it was really important, obviously, for them to win the series, but also for them to win in two games. And just a fun team to watch. Jose Ramirez, obviously one of the great players in the game. They have so much going on right now that is just so cool. And Francona, it might be his finest hour. And that's saying something because he's had a remarkable career. Now, the Mariners, the comeback kids, they are a team that I liked going into the postseason because of their pitching. And I didn't expect that they would win a series that was taking place entirely at Rogers Center, but I thought they had a puncher's chance. And we saw why, at least to a degree, with Castillo. He was amazing in Game 1. Robbie Ray was not that in Game 2. But what they have and what they think will be an advantage going forward is depth in their rotation and depth in their bullpen. Their fourth starter, George Kirby, was the guy who closed the game for them, closed the series out in Toronto. They can go into the next round with Logan Gilbert starting game one. They didn't have to use him. Castillo game two, Robbie Ray game three. They could either go Kirby in game four or Gilbert on normal rest or switch it the other way around and Kirby and Gilbert, Gilbert and Kirby, however they want to do it. They do have depth in the bullpen as well. They have not played well against the Astros. We all know that. But again, they are kind of riding a wave right now. And this is a five-game series. It's not seven. I don't know that they can catch lightning again, but maybe they do. And finally, the Phillies. What they accomplished by beating the Cardinals is something that obviously not only validates their season, but really is a just reward for fans who have waited such a long time. And I'm talking about two fan bases here, the Phillies and the Mariners. They haven't seen home playoff games in Philadelphia's case since 2011, in the Mariners' case since 2001, and that's going to happen now. Home playoff games. Obviously, Wheeler and Nola are huge for them. Going forward, Suarez in game one, they didn't have to use him. Wheeler in game two, Nola in game three. Game four is going to be a bullpen game. Maybe we'll see Gibson and Syndergaard. I don't know exactly how it will play out. And then game five, if it occurs, as with game four, Suarez, again, on normal rest. Can they beat the Braves? We all know how good the Braves are. But at the very least, the Phillies have won a series now. They are going to play home games again, like the Mariners. And this tops off what has been a resurgent season for the franchise. After the firing of Joe Girardi, they took off under Rob Thompson, and they are still going. So that's it, Tim. Those are my thoughts on just 2 days of baseball, and it's going to be amazing to see. Actually, I didn't even talk about the Mets and Padres because we want to see how that plays out, but that's been a fascinating series as well.
We'll have a full preview of the next round coming up later today, actually, on the Athletic Baseball Show. Derek Van Riper, Eno Saris will have that for you. They'll be doing that every round through the playoffs, an extra bonus edition on the feed. So definitely check that out. We're going to get the answer that the question's always asked, right? Can rest versus momentum? And that's what this setup kind of causes when you have this three-game series, because these teams that are have been waiting since last Wednesday was their last game, and they'll play on Tuesday versus these teams that will be depleted on the pitching side. It's going to be fun to find out how that equation plays out. And with that, let's move on to the mailbag.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey, this is Ken. I'm not available right now. Please leave a voicemail.
If you want to get involved next week, you can call us 646-543-7072. You can also email us tabaseballshow@gmail.com. We have plenty of questions about the playoffs, not about the game so much, Ken, but about the setup and lots of different things surrounding the playoffs. Let's start with John. He says, curious to know if the subject of playoff game start times has ever been raised in previous CBA negotiations. It always seems odd to me that teams play 162 games in the regular season, with most of those games starting at either 1 p.m. or 7 p.m. local time, only to get to the postseason where they're playing late afternoon start games or later at night start games, especially in the early innings with the sun. TV obligations and scheduling surely make this difficult to avoid, but even so, I think MLB would want the playoffs to recreate season conditions wherever possible to maintain consistency.
Well, in a perfect world, you're right, but it's not necessarily a perfect world. And I had to research this question because I wasn't sure of the answer. I looked at the CBA. There's nothing about postseason schedules in the CBA. There is a lot about the regular season schedule, things that can be done travel-wise, things that can't be done. When it comes to the postseason, it's the league and the networks that get to decide when the games are played. Now, why do they do it in the way they do it? Staggering the games? Well, they want as many people watching all of the games as possible. That's the simple answer. And I can say this as someone who works for Fox Sports, one of the networks, it is just something that is part of the landscape with television. And keep in mind, the networks pay billions of dollars for these rights, and the postseason is when those rights are most valuable, when the viewing is highest. So that's why it's done the way it is. And even in the regular season, there are starting times that the players don't always find comfortable. We'll have 4 o'clock games on Saturday afternoon. And I remember back when Chase Utley was playing, he would often comment to me, maybe not so nicely, about the start time and the shadows as if I had any control over the situation. But I was the person at Fox and he would just kind of tease me. But it is the networks with input from the league, and maybe it's the other way around, the league with input from the networks, that makes these decisions. It is not something that is collectively bargained, and it is something that, again, is just done simply to maximize viewers.
Yeah, I mean, I get John's question, but I also loved watching 4 games in a row on Friday, starting at noon and going all the way up late night. As a viewer, while it you know, annoying for some of the players, it is a lot of fun when you get those 4 game days. I know that. All right, next question is coming from voicemail.
Hey, Ken. My name's Tom. I'm calling from upstate New York. I have a question I've always wondered about but never really had a good answer for, which is Major League Baseball uses 6 umpires during the postseason. Can you explain to me why they wouldn't use 6 umpires year-round?
Tom, I don't know the exact answer to your question. I know why they use 6 in the postseason, and that's because they want as many umpires as they can have on the field, within reason, to make sure that the calls are made properly. Now, you can say, well, why don't they do that in the regular season? Why not hire more umpires? I don't know that during the regular season we need umpires standing down the baselines, especially with replay now that can cover so much and so many questionable calls. So you can argue the same thing with the postseason, but that is the reasoning. Now, what's interesting is a lot of fans always ask, well, how are umpires even chosen for the postseason? This I can tell you about. It's based largely on performance, but also seniority. And when I say performance, I'm talking about zone evaluation systems for plate assignments, accuracy on calls, observations by umpiring supervisors, the way they handle situations, all these kinds of things. And also in the postseason, you guys should know that an umpire cannot work 2 consecutive series. So if an umpire is working the wild card round, he can work again in the LCS or presumably the World Series, but he cannot work wild card round, division series back to back. Likewise, division series, LCS back to back. So these questions do come up. I'm sure we'll have our share of umpiring controversies. We always do, but that's what I got.
All right, next question, also a voicemail.
Hey, Ken and Tim, this is Lee. A question here. What do guys who don't make postseason rosters end up doing? And what is the rationale behind them not traveling with the team and being unrostered? Just a quick question, insider info sort of thing. Thanks, guys.
Sometimes they do travel with the teams, and they are available if a player is injured and they are needed to be added to the roster. This happens all the time. And you will see in the hours before postseason games, well, actually, fans won't see this, but if you're in the park, like I often am, there will be simulated games taking place with maybe some bench players, maybe some guys who needed bats, players who are not on the roster facing pitchers who are not on the roster, and that's how they keep sharp. So it is not something where teams are caught unaware. They have extra bodies in case they are needed.
All right, some controversy broke out, well, not here in the United States or in Canada, but internationally around baseball last week. We had 2 foreign listeners writing questions about it. Paul living in Belize, Tom from the Netherlands. They wrote in questioning MLB's decision to charge international fans for the postseason on MLB.TV this season after including the postseason in the past? This is Tom's specific question. Recently, MLB TV announced that the postseason live stream won't be accessible to international viewers. I know MLB wants to grow internationally, so then why would they back out for international viewers? Here in the Netherlands, there are no other means to watch the postseason, so it completely baffles me, especially with some of the early start times being perfect for European viewers. Can you shed some light on this?
I can shed some light on this, but I advise you to read Evan Drellick's article in The Athletic. It was from Friday, and he took a deep dive into this, and I had seen a lot of action on Twitter, so to speak, about this, and from fans overseas who had serious complaints about this whole situation. And obviously, in a sport that is trying to expand internationally, it was not well received that what has happened. So I don't know what this will mean in the future. As Evan wrote, The Athletic reached out to a spokesperson at the commissioner's office by phone on Thursday evening and was told to email questions. The Athletic sent several. More than 24 hours later, the commissioner's office had not provided a quote to explain the situation. A league spokesperson said MLB TV refunds were available to affected fans who reach out via email. That's not a satisfactory answer for a lot of people. A lot of people just want to see the games, and I get it. So this is something that, again, I don't have better answers on because obviously MLB did not even give Evan answers at all. But it is curious to me the position that MLB would take here. And if they had an explanation, we'd be happy to share that explanation. But all they said was that MLB.TV refunds were available to the affected fans.
Yeah, just a weird thing and bad timing when everybody, you know, everything should be good about baseball, right? The beginning of October, and this becomes the story heading into wild card weekend. Certainly interesting. All right. Next question from Steven. He says, "Hey, Tim and Ken, while I do not want to take anything away from Aaron Judge's historic season, I think his chase for the Triple Crown in 2022 raises the question of whether a player should be deemed to have won the Triple Crown in this era where there is no longer a difference between the two leagues. Would Judge have deserved the Triple Crown had he overtaken Luis Arraez for the AL batting title in the final weeks, but fallen short of the average attained by National Leaguers Freddie Freeman and Jeff McNeil? There is a universal DH, interleague play, and soon a balanced schedule. The differences in the leagues have been eliminated. Do you think MLB will ever change and look at stats league-wide for achievements and records, not by ALNL?"
Steven, that's an excellent question. And you're right. The lines between the leagues have never been blurrier. With the universal DH, with greater interleague play coming, all of these things that are happening. But for now, we still do have two leagues. And there is a distinction in that these two leagues play for the World Series title every year, the American League, the National League. There are American League award winners. There are National League award winners. Now, it's possible, I would think, once baseball goes to 32 teams, and that will happen at some point. Don't ask me when. It's going to happen. They want it to happen. They just have to figure out what they say are the situations in Tampa Bay and Oakland, and then they can proceed with expansion. Once you do that, if you realign the leagues totally and essentially take away the distinctions altogether, and they've been moving toward this, I don't know if they'll ever get completely there, but if you do that, then what you're saying, Steven, is absolutely true. It would be an MLB Triple Crown, I would think. It would be an MLB Cy Young Award winner. That's an interesting question too, because there are bonuses for two awards. I don't know how that would work, but this is something that on your part has a lot of vision, a lot of foresight, because these questions are going to come up.
And speaking of Judge, just a reminder that The Athletic releasing a hardcover coffee table book commemorating Aaron Judge's special 2022 seasons titled Chasing History, How Aaron Judge Captivated Baseball in 2022. Relive the drama in a keepsake of the last generations. You can get that book by going to judge.theathleticbook.com.
NBAFanTalk.com.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager. On to the mailbag we go with Alan, who says, after watching the Red Sox-Yankees game where Cole got taught, now this is back a few weeks, Ken, because I know you were trying to get some response from the league on this, back when Cole got tossed at the end of the sixth, I'm a Red Sox fan, but I love baseball. Are umpires trained in de-escalation techniques in the replay? After Cole's first words, I saw the ump kind of tighten the shoulders and engage, which just pushes that emotion through the roof. Umpires can save ejections by being less emotional and understanding in the heat of the moment reactions. That first expletive is emotion at its purest and needs to be left there. With umpires' reactions, there is more escalation than de-escalation, and it made me wonder if they receive any training.
I did ask this question of Major League Baseball, and I did not get a completely direct answer. What I was told is that the league does make situation handling a point of emphasis and feedback. Now, that's not saying that they're training umpires in this regard, but they're talking about it, I guess, after they already have the jobs. It's something that is very much part of the discussions, the ongoing discussions that, of course, take place between employer and employee. They also have some umpires who are well-regarded by clubs and by players, for that matter, for their ability to know the rules, to communicate, and to apply feel for a situation. In other words, some umpires are better at this, better at de-escalating, for lack of a better term, than others. And we've seen some of them. We know who they are. But at the same time, with regard to specific training, I'm not sure, based on the response I got, that there is specific training, but there certainly is discussion about that.
It would certainly, to the question's point, be great if they just ignore that initial emotion. I feel like that's the first step, but I don't know. I'm not trained in that either. Next question comes from
you know what, Tim? Also, I should say this. Listen, we've all been in workplace situations, right, where you lose your temper.
Yeah.
Where you might regret something that you say in the heat of the moment, and I don't want to put it tritely, but umpires are people too. And umpires take a lot of heat. And there are going to be times when, yes, some umpires act in a way that fans, players, coaches, managers might not think is appropriate. Absolutely. But there are also times where they're pushed to the limit and they're going to push back. Just human nature.
Sometimes that umpire had a bad day, too. That happens. You never know. All right. Next question comes from voicemail.
Hey, Ken. First time, long time. This is Alex from the depths of Citi Field. I'm calling to ask about league expansion. I haven't been a cognizant a live person to witness league expansion in baseball, what will some type of draft look like for the new teams? Like, do they select from other existing clubs like you saw in the NHL? And this is my real question. What teams stand to benefit to offload talent in the event of some type of league draft for the new club?
I don't know that there is a great benefit for teams that want to offload players, because those kinds of players, players with bad contracts, players who aren't worth the money they're getting, are not going to be taken in the expansion draft. That's just reality. If you're an expansion team, you're thinking, we're not taking your garbage. So that's how it would work. Now, let me explain the mechanics of it, at least how it happened in 1997 when the Diamondbacks and then Devil Rays made their selections. Each of those teams selected 35 players, 35. The draft consisted of three rounds. Each of the 28 existing teams submitted protected lists. First round, they could protect 15 players from the entire organization. So your best players, any players on your 40-man roster you want to protect, even any top prospects you want to protect. And then you would add three players after each round. So you can add three after the first, add three after the second. Now, certain players were exempt. The exemptions were really young guys for the most part. Players with no prior major league experience who had less than 3 years service after getting signed at 19, and players with less than 4 years service after getting signed at 18. So the younger guys. But that's how it would work. And I assume that once we get there, and we will get there, as I said earlier, it's going to take some time still, the mechanics of the draft will work in much the same fashion. And again, we've seen these drafts happen before. We saw it earlier than 98 with the Rockies and the Marlins. And they're a lot of fun to watch. The transactions, which we all love, come fast and furious when you have a draft. Quite obviously, you can trade picks as well. So we can count down the days. We just don't know when the countdown will end.
And it's always interesting the directions the teams take, whether they try to be bad and get super young versus, I think it was the Rockies got good fast, right? Is that right, Ken? I'm trying to think back. They were in the playoffs within a few years back with Don Baylor managing.
They were. I can't remember how they approached the draft, Tim, exactly. I'd have to go back and look. But yes, there are different kinds of approaches you can take.
All right, one more question. It's another voicemail.
Hey, Ken. Hey, Tim. This is Scott calling from Vancouver. What is it about baseball and its traditions that make the idea of changes so abhorrent to so many involved? There seem to be more objections to changes in baseball compared to other sports. In particular, why do many players seem to hate the changes when within a few years of the changes coming in, a large percentage of the players will have spent their entire professional careers with these rules when they're coming up through the minors? Even many players this year would have experienced the rules a bit with players being called up and sent down on a rehab assignment. So it's not as though nobody will have any experience with these rules in the next few years, or next year, I should say, when they come in. I get that veterans may have grown accustomed to how they play, but they're supposed to be the best of the best, and it just seems silly to me that they don't want to adapt just because they've been playing for such a long time. And it sort of seems to me like they aren't interested in how the game will change going forward for the new young players.
Well, the players had different kinds of objections to the way these new rules are going to be implemented. That was why they did not, as a block or at the block that they had on that committee, the competition committee, vote in favor. It doesn't mean that all players are opposed. In fact, a lot of players, a good chunk of players, including the ones you mentioned, the guys who came up through the minor leagues and have experienced already a pitch clock, they have no problem with it. But you heard some concerns from more veteran players just about the way it was being implemented, the timetable, the different aspects of it. I'm not going to get into details here, but that was it more than the actual change. I don't know that if I went up to Gerrit Cole and said, do you oppose a pitch clock? He would say, I oppose a pitch clock. He might say, I oppose the way we're doing this, and I have questions about this and questions about that. And that's why the vote went the way it did. You make some great points. Clearly, many players have experienced the clock and have adapted to it well. And keep in mind too, now granted, the players have a very strong union, arguably the most powerful labor union in the history of labor unions. But all of us in our work as time goes on face changes, right? And we have to adapt. I can point to myself. I'm sure you can point to yourself. All the listeners can point to themselves. Dealing with things that at the start of their professional careers that they might not have had to have dealt with. So yes, there is a certain adaptation that has to take place. But when you have a union and when you have a say, you're going to try to express your interests as best as possible.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's show. Great questions, as always. If you want to get involved down the road, 646-543-7072. The email's tabaseballshow@gmail.com. I mentioned on the feed, really throughout October, there'll be an extra episode every week as we preview the next round. DVR and Eno Saris will have that for you, depending on when you're listening to this, at some point on Monday evening to preview the division series. Then Starkville's coming up Tuesday morning. Things in flux. We have some great guests efforting. I will put that right now. Nothing confirmed as we record this, but there'll be a great guest on Starkville. Then the Roundtable 3-0 show and DVR and Law round out the rest of your week. You can join The Athletic for $1 a month for 6 months. Go to theathletic.com/baseball show. No better time than right now. The baseball playoffs, NBA is about to be back, hockey's back, football's in full swing. What a great time to get the best writing in the business. Ken, the Fox, your Fox crew, where are you for the division series?
Tim, as we were recording this, I literally got word that my group is going to do the Phillies Braves, not the Dodgers. Now, as we sit here at the day and the time we're recording this, we don't know who the Dodgers are playing. And all I know is that this was a complicated decision that it took a lot of time to get straightened out. And there are things that go into these decisions that, frankly, even I don't understand. But you will see me from Atlanta Tuesday night on Phillies Braves.
No time zone change. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yes, that's pretty good. Obviously, if it's Mets Dodgers, that's a great series too. And you deal with the time zone change. But this is the way it's going to be.
All right. Well, you enjoy the series. And everybody out there, have a great week. We'll talk to you soon.